Packers fans, and welcome in to the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. It is a special holiday edition here of the Green 19 podcast. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, as we are breaking down the Packers' 24-22 win over the Cleveland Browns. Guys, a win that saw quite a few records broke and reset tonight, including the big one. Aaron Rodgers threw his 443rd touchdown pass. It is a new Packers franchise record. Ryan, I'm going to come to you first because I know that's what you wrote on. So I know you dove into it the past few hours. How special was that moment for Aaron Rodgers, for Packers fans, and just for all of those of us that got to see it?
Yeah, I think Matt LaFleur said it best after the game. He said the moment gave him chills, and he's really, really glad that they won the game too. And that they didn't dampen the moment, because this is what you would call an easy game story to write. It's pretty, you know, the quick gamer's pretty obvious, 443. And for a moment there at the end, it was like, wait a second, they might actually lose this? That's not the way it's supposed to work. Right. You have a record like that, you're not supposed to lose the game, especially when you lead the whole way. So they did. They had to pull it out. They had to gut it out at the end, and to their credit, they did. But I don't think there's any question that from Brett Favre's prepared message to Lucas Patrick lifting Aaron Rodgers in the air to Alan Lazard giving Aaron Rodgers the touchdown ball, the record ball, and just being here on Christmas Day at Lambeau Field, this is the way it was supposed to happen. It's a big record. And you could not have asked for a better setting for it.
Spoon, you've covered a lot of Packers games. You've covered Brett Favre. You've covered Aaron Rodgers' entire career. Did you think he would get to this point? Or at what point, I guess, did you realize he would probably get to this point?
I guess I didn't really think about it all that much. I kind of lost track of the record. It's kind of the remarkable part is that they've had back-to-back quarterbacks do that, have over 400 touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get it, a guy plays long enough, he's going to get it. He's going to get those kind of records because you don't play that long without being pretty good. So, yeah, it was I don't know why, but it just seemed kind of I thought last week's game was more exciting, and that this was just kind of a formality, you know, throwing that ball to Lazard. And I don't know why, but the one that Favre threw to Greg Jennings for the record was he really celebrated it in an amazing way. And this one I just thought was kind of, that's nice. He's got the record. So, you know, on to the next one. Because he's got other records he's going for, too.
You know, it's a bit paradoxical to me. On one hand, it's a record that seemed inevitable for years because Aaron Rodgers plays in a league now that the rules are bent toward boosting the passing game.
Yeah.
And so it's just, I remember my first season on the beat was 2014, and pretty much the whole time that I've been here, it was just kind of like a formality. Like, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw more touchdowns than Brett Favre because that's just the league now. That's just what happens. But at the same time, this was a moment that this offseason seemed like it very, very possibly was never going to happen. And that even though it's been inevitable for years, they're not going to have this moment. And I think that Aaron Rodgers I don't think he's had a regret once that he came back when he said that he considered retirement this offseason. He's in position to get a second MVP. He potentially has a Super Bowl team that he's leading. But it's still to have a moment like this, I think it obviously justifies the decision to come back. I mean, this was the perfect setting for the moment that – it seemed inevitable for years and also seemed like it might never happen this offseason. So it was a good moment, I think, for everyone involved.
Well, does it grease the skids for him to leave now? So he's got the record, so what else is there if they win the Super Bowl? Maybe they just move on from Aaron Rodgers. You know, I mean, that could be part of it too. But see, that's for another day.
Yeah, and I think that I've been of the mindset that if they get to the Super Bowl, win or lose, if they get to the Super Bowl, he comes back. Because either one, they win and he realizes he can still win with this team and he comes back and he wants to do it again, or he realizes he can at least still get there and he wants to finish it.
But that's the irony. If he does come back, they can't win a Super Bowl because they're going to lose so many guys because of his salary cap number that they're not going to have the people to win another Super Bowl. So it's kind of a catch-22, you know. Yeah. He comes back and they cut half the guys that are any good, and he doesn't come back and they can keep them, you know. So
but not have the quarterback.
Yeah. Right.
I think that I've thought this for a little while. I think that they have to do whatever it takes, bar none, from a team standpoint, to have Aaron Rodgers play quarterback in 2022 and to have Davante Adams on the field for him to throw to. I think that's priority 1A and 1B, and you figure out everything else.
Start passing the basket at church.
I'm going to disagree with that, but that's for a later discussion. I have some thoughts on how that should go, but we should talk about this game.
So
I'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Spoon said, I have some thoughts.
That was Spoon verbally smacking me in case you didn't know.
You know, it's just, you can do that, but you're talking about losing a whole heck of a lot of guys. You're talking about cutting a lot of guys if you sign those two guys. Mm-hmm. And you can push some of it off, I guess, into the future. But, you know, you still are going to have some tough choices to make next year.
And you're talking about cutting a lot of guys, but you're also talking about losing an MVP quarterback and starting from scratch at the most important position by far in the game.
Yeah.
That's why
they did that in 2008.
It worked great. Does lightning strike twice?
I don't know, but
I don't think you can predict that. I don't think you can expect a miracle to happen again.
No, but with an MVP quarterback, you've only won one Super Bowl. So, And this year is not guaranteed either.
True.
So it doesn't mean you have to have an MVP quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It puts you in the running every single year. But, again, like I said, we're probably getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Guys, for as special as that moment was, though, breaking the record and having the message from Brett Favre and everyone getting to be a part of that, as you said, this game almost went the other way. Davante Adams straight up said, we got lucky, basically, because of the Browns driving towards the end. And there were four turnovers in this game. There were almost five between Baker Mayfield and the Packers secondary, and that's really what made the difference. If not for those turnovers, this could have been a very, very different game. Are you concerned with the current state of this Packers defense, Spoon, based on this game and the past couple of weeks, but looking specifically at this game tonight?
Well, yes. I think there's reason for the Packers to be concerned. I think what is, you know, it's okay to have a bad game. It's okay to give up some rushing yards, even, you know, in one game, maybe you give up some rushing yards. In another game, you let a quarterback scramble. But I think what's most concerning to them is some of the gaffes that they have, you know, where they have 10 men on the field or they have a guy uncovered inside the five-yard line, and they don't know what they're playing, what defense they're playing. And there's confusion, and those are the plays that are going to kill you in the playoffs. You just cannot have those kind of bonehead mistakes. And whether that's from not getting the calls in quick enough or guys not totally on the same page, they had been sort of avoiding those for a while. And now all of a sudden they're popping up. They're starting to miss more tackles. Well, that might have just been because of Nick Chubb, who's a phenomenal runner. I mean, really a good player. But, I want to see them. I think next week against Minnesota is a better test of where they're at defensively.
Better test, but possibly a different test, would you say? Because the Packers had done so well against mobile quarterbacks, and so that's what the label we had given them, you know, able to stop a mobile quarterback in a ground game. This tonight, or this against the Browns, was almost nothing but a ground game. I'm trying to pull the stats back up real quick here to see what their final total was. Yeah, Nick Chubb ended with 17 carries for 126 yards and a touchdown. Overall, the Browns had 12 rushing first downs and then 219 yards total on the ground. Minnesota Vikings are a very different offense. They're going to go over the top and go down deep to Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. So
not if they got Dalvin Cook. I don't forget, was it last year he came in here and rushed for like 183 yards or something like that?
Yeah.
So
he's had some moments.
Yeah.
His defense.
So that's why I think it's that's why I think that's a challenge. Assuming he's off the COVID list,
mm-hmm.
They have a complete offense.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they probably are weaker at than the Browns is offensive line.
Yeah.
But they have a better quarterback. They have a really good running back, and they got two really good wide receivers.
Speaking of the Browns' offensive line, sorry, for the Packers to come away with 5 sacks versus that offensive line, granted, no J.C. Treader, but still, 5 sacks against that offensive line, against a quarterback who can get away from them, I mean, how much of that is having Kenny Clark back? And is that sort of the balance of playing, you know, you might not – be as tough in the trenches, but you can get into the backfield, Ryan?
Well, Rashawn Gary's turning into a star. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of having the season that you – like the requisite season that you need if you're going to make a Pro Bowl.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't a Pro Bowler this year. He's on the was within distance of it. But he's having that, like, name recognition season that then you can springboard in 2022 potentially. He's going to end up with double-digit sacks. His second game this season with 2 sacks in a game. He's becoming a star. He's reaching the potential that the Packers saw in him when they drafted him 12th overall, and it's been absolutely huge. Obviously, with no Za'Darius Smith this year, I mean they needed Rashawn Gary to have this kind of season, and he's delivered. He's become an absolute handful to block. I don't think there's any question that Kenny Clark being back was helpful. It wasn't just Rashawn Gary. Preston Smith had a sack. Dean Lowry had a good rush. Tipa Galea fell on Baker Mayfield after Baker Mayfield fell. But, in this pass rush, it has all started and emanated around Rashawn Gary. And the way that he's been able to deliver this season has been absolutely not just important, it's been necessary. They've needed this.
Spoon, I know you were focusing a lot on that Browns offensive line this week coming into the game. What was your takeaway about how this Packers pass rush and D-line performed against them?
Well, so they were without Treader. They were also without their left tackle, Jedrick Wills, who's on the COVID list. So they had to move Joel Bitonio, who's a really good left guard. They had to move him to left tackle. And so they were a little bit... they were not themselves, but they were extremely physical. I thought that they really took it to the Packers. And, Gary had some really nice rushes, but he was also part of the problem with over-pursuing, with not holding his gap, letting guys get outside. And that's been an issue for both him and Preston Smith, especially the last couple of games. They have to be more disciplined in the run game because, if you looked at it, Huntley just had, last week had a field day running, scrambling outside, and they really worked the perimeter again in this game with the end of rounds with Schwartz. He had a couple of nice gains. Mayfield got out once. And then Chubb, I thought most of his best runs were to the outside. So they do have, they got some issues there that they have got to address. Their pass rush was good getting to Mayfield. You know, anytime you get five sacks, that's key. Five sacks and four interceptions, you better win. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some stuff they need to clean up, especially on the perimeter.
As you mentioned, four interceptions. Somewhere that they don't have issues is with Rasul Douglas. I mean, I don't know what else we can say about this guy that hasn't been said already, but he had two interceptions versus the Browns. I know there has been some controversy on the World Wide Web about whether or not he should have been flagged on that last interception that was essentially a game winner. You think if you look at it, you can kind of see it's going to just be hand fighting. There's not much that's going to get called there in most situations. That being said, he came up with two interceptions versus the Brown. He now has a team-leading five interceptions. He's been here less than 3 months and has now, as Ryan pointed out earlier on our Facebook Live, two pick sixes and two game winners. So, obviously, he's not going to be taken off the field anytime soon here. Ryan, just how much have they come to rely on Rasul Douglas, and how much were his two interceptions versus the Browns about being lucky versus being in the right spot and making himself lucky?
You know, the thing that strikes me about Rasul Douglas is that he's really become what they drafted Josh Jackson to be in the second round. They thought that with Josh Jackson, they were getting a physical kind of tall and rangy corner that obviously didn't run the best speed and wasn't going to wow you with raw physical talent. But the thing that he had was ball hawking and ball playing ability. He led the country at Iowa coming out of the draft before the Packers took him in the second round with eight interceptions the year before he came out. And that's what he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be an opportunistic ball hawking type corner. And that's exactly what Rasul Douglas had. You know, obviously, the Packers traded Josh Jackson for Isaac Yiadom in training camp this year. And Rasul Douglas has become that. He doesn't run the best time. He's not going to just overpower you with dominant physical ability and athleticism. But he's physical. He's gritty. He's always in the right place. And he can absolutely play the football. There's no question his ball-playing ability is the strength of his game. Five interceptions, it's ridiculous what he's done. And it's one of those things, he's on one right now, and at some point it will slow down. You cannot keep this type of pace up. But as ridiculous as the number five is, the timeliness of his picks, you know, he's been clutch. And so, you know, Davante Adams called him a superstar. Aaron Rodgers said he's not a role player. He's a star. He's playing like a star right now. The last 2 months, he's played like a star. And, you know, just like Rashawn Gary, his pass rushing has been really important without Za'Darius Smith. Rasul Douglas's playmaking and his coverage has been really important without Jair Alexander. If they are able to get Jair Alexander back, watch it. Those two corners together could be very special.
Spoon, Matt LaFleur said he's never seen anything like Rasul Douglas's run in his time in football. You've been in football a pretty long time as well. Have you ever seen anything like this? And, have you ever seen anything like this run that Rasul Douglas is currently on where, you know, they always say in basketball, when a guy's on a tear, the rim looks as big as a pool. I feel like right now that football probably looks like a beach ball to Rasul Douglas.
Yeah, he is really, what I like about him most is that he is a smart player. So they talk a lot about how he studies, and he does seem to have good anticipation about when to go for the ball and, you know, when not to. And he is always in position. You don't have to have the most speed to be a really good corner. It helps, that's for sure. But They seem to be using him in exactly the right way, and he's just he's a gamer. He's one of those guys you like having. I mean, Richard Sherman wasn't, and I'm not saying he's Richard Sherman, but Richard Sherman wasn't a great 40-yard dash guy, but he knew how to play the game. He studied it, and I think that's what Rasul Douglas is, that type of a player.
Like we said, he saved the game for them yet again with an interception at the end as the Browns were driving for, I mean, a field goal would have won it at that point. I mean, you still had, about a minute left. Aaron Rodgers probably would have ended up with about 30, 40 seconds left, could have run a couple of plays. We saw him do it at San Francisco, but feasibly a field goal would have won that game. And Rasul Douglas said, not in my house. Feels like since he's been here, he's made Lambeau Field his house. But on the other side of the ball, as we said, that was a close game that Rasul Douglas had to save because the offense slowed down in the second half. They got super, super conservative in the second half. I believe Matt LaFleur said a little bit of that had to do with who came in on the offensive line. You know, you have to start calling things for your protection and what you're doing there. I think in the first half versus the second half, the yardage was drastically different. I mean, Spoon, why do you think, or from what you gathered from what Matt LaFleur said and the player said, why did things become so conservative in the second half?
Well, I don't know. I thought that they were trying to run the ball and develop some, you know, use Dylan and use Jones. They had some success moving the ball with those guys. I just thought they kind of got out of a rhythm. Like the offense lacked a little bit of a rhythm. But let's face it, if Davante Adams catches that ball on that drive in which they punted, that's a different game. It's a completely different game. I think it just came down to a couple plays that they couldn't make. And sometimes that's the way it is. I don't know. The drive where they're talking about, where Rodgers said that Cleveland went to single high because they knew the Packers were going to run the ball, he wanted to take a shot down there. I still don't have a problem with them running it three times. I kind of thought that Dylan maybe should get a little bit more of a chance in the second half, but they were, I don't really think they were conservative. I don't know.
Davante Adams talked about that throw that he missed. He said it was in the lights the whole time, but that's still a play he should have made. I mean, Ryan, do you feel like the second half came down to that play, on offense at least? And what sort of beget that change or led to that change?
No, I don't think it came down to that. But, you know, that's a play that Davante Adams makes.
He said, I make that 10 out of 9 times.
Yeah. and the one is when it gets caught in the lights the entire time, you just can't see it. That's why it's not 100%, right? There's always that one ball, and it just happened to be that one ball. Still should have made the play, but sometimes you get a bad brick like that. But I just thought that the offense looked stuck in the mud that second half. And you know, there were long drives. They had a long drive to open the third quarter, and the Browns had a long drive. But to me, everyone's going to pile on the defense, and I understand why. They're giving up a lot. For five straight games now, they've given up a lot of explosive gains, and that's something that they didn't do much of in the first half of the season. They've got to cut that out. But the reason for concern to me is that this is a team that just has not put together a complete game. And you've got the defense that gives up explosive gains, and you got the offense that had countless chances to end it and finish it and wasn't able to. The special what the special teams are. Mm-hmm. It's atrocious. They've won. They're 12-3, best record in the NFL. You know that, and there's something to be said in that. I mean, a week ago, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers got shut out at home against a New Orleans Saints team that's very much like the Browns, this Browns team. Not great, not bad, just kind of middling. They are, just all right. Good teams lose games like this. So there's something to be said about winning, but if you don't put together a complete game, that's how you get beat in the playoffs. So if you're looking for reasons to be concerned, to me, it's just the lack of being putting together all three phases.
Special teams versus the Browns, though, didn't suck. And that's high praise for this unit.
There's such a low bar that they're trying to pass.
Didn't suck. Spoon, were you surprised to see Amari Rodgers back out there again? Or did you think that they would continue to go back to their rookie?
I thought that they would maybe just stick with him on kick returns because he seems to be pretty decent on kickoff returns.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of what you want on kickoff returns. He's a big physical guy who can take it up in there. And he had, if someone didn't miss their block, he had a chance to break a really long one because he went right up in the hole and then a guy kind of caught him who wasn't blocked, caught him from the side. I thought he was solid. And he even fielded a punt and was, which, yeah, like you said, the bar is really low. But he got a 9-yard return on one of the punts. So it was much better. I mean, they still had some gaffes. I mean, they still weren't perfect, but they were better. And Crosby hit, I think he's hit 6 or 7 field goals now.
Well, now you've jinxed him.
So, I don't believe in jinxes. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they needed that kind of performance. I'm trying to remember, what was the one really boneheaded play they had? Someone committed a penalty. Oh, it was Patrick Taylor had the like a wedge block or a double team block. And I'm like, you're supposed to be taught that not to do that. But I'll be interested to hear what Mo Drayton says about that.
Yeah.
I just love that Spoon gave maybe the most lukewarm compliment in the history of mankind, which is Amari Rodgers fielded a punt.
I'm the king of
he fielded a punt
compliments.
He fielded a punt. Well, he did do that.
I did add that he had a 9-yard game.
You did. You did.
Let me ask y'all this, since I mentioned it earlier and I sort of glossed it over, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to address it if you feel the need to. Should the play where Rasul Douglas picked off at the end for the game winner, should it have been a flag? Spoon?
Yes. I mean, he grabbed it. I need to go back and look and see if the ball was in the air when he grabbed him.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, yeah, he tugged him a little bit. I've seen worse, you know. It's a tug, yeah. You know, the ball is, I guess the ball is in the air now that you're showing it to me. It's the inconsistency in pass interference has been really bad. And so, yeah, I think it was probably pass interference. But I've seen, you know, who was it in the Seattle game? There was a worse call than that. So, I don't know.
You know who is wondering where the flag was? He'll never say it because, you know, he's not going to throw a teammate under the bus like that. Is Kevin King.
Why?
What do you mean?
Oh. An NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Come on now. Get some long memories.
Yeah, but the problem,
I'm not saying it's the same play. It's just in that moment, game winner, there's contact.
Yeah.
The problem last year, you get the flag this year.
The jersey, right. And you could see it right in front of the official. This one, I think Douglas had the benefit of what? The back judge probably was looking at his back, at Douglas's back. You know, the field judge may not have seen it, so.
It does say, it's a big difference when you don't grab, and that's, you know.
Yeah.
Not pulling is a big difference. I don't know. I don't know what pass interference is anymore, so.
Yeah, no one does.
It's hard for me to get all bent out of shape that they didn't call it there because, was there contact? Yeah, but you see it called both. Yeah. I kind of like them letting him play there, I guess, a little bit. But if you're the Browns, you obviously feel differently and you have some case.
Yeah, and when your playoff hopes are in the balance,
right.
You can understand why they do.
But here's the thing. If you're the Browns, don't throw 4 interceptions.
Yeah. Right.
Like don't give up
5 sacks.
Don't throw a punt down the middle of the field to Darnell Savage. Don't completely airmail a wide open easy completion to Jarvis Landry. Like if you're the Browns, like, okay, yeah, maybe you don't like that play. You had a lot of other plays that you just got to make.
Totally.
And they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and when I look at it, it seems like he had a hand on him. He had, like, some sort of grab, but he didn't tug. And that would be where I would think the flag is pulled, is on the tug. And it, you can't really tell from the angle that we're watching, but I feel like Donovan Peoples-Jones probably had his hand on him, too. I mean, it's in that situation. And what was it in the NFC Championship last year?
Tug. It was a tug.
Oh, look, somebody pulled it up right here. No, where it was Alan Lazard and Murphy. I'm trying to remember his last name.
Yeah, on the interception.
Yeah,
the first half.
Somebody at least tweeted it for us. And so in that situation, I don't expect it to be called. Like you said, I'm sure Cleveland Browns fans feel much differently about it. But again, don't throw 4 interceptions. Don't give up 5 sacks. It, even if you take that one off the board for the flag, he still throws 3. And so, and he almost threw another one, but Eric Stokes dropped it. And so that's a debate for another day. At least the most consistent thing about the officials in this league are is the inconsistency. So, you know, death taxes, not knowing what they're going to call. It's nice to count on something in here in life. Guys, they come back next week to face the Minnesota Vikings. At this point, they've locked up a playoff spot. They're fighting for a number one seed. Cardinals lost to the Colts?
Yes, they did.
Cardinals lost to the Colts. You have to still see what Tampa Bay does. Feels like the number one seed is there in the grasp, especially this after the Vikings game. I mean, do you feel like it's still right there in front of them, Spoon, that this is pretty much a given at this point that they're going to lock up the number one seed?
It's not a given, but the Cardinals are eliminated now from it. They can't overcome the Packers. Dallas is still in it. Tampa is still in it. It's anything could happen next week against Minnesota. I mean, division games, and let's not forget COVID. I mean, it can wipe your roster out just like that. I mean, before the game, the Packers lost 3 guys.
Yeah.
Shamar Jean Charles, Kevin King, and Ladarius Hamilton. So, shoot, they've been really lucky up to this point, and now it's in their building. We know it's in the building. Can they survive it? And we'll know more about that this week.
Feels like that could be their biggest opponent. I think that's what our colleague Pete Doherty said, may have even been in his column, that their biggest opponent over the next couple of weeks may be COVID. Just trying to stay away from it and keeping guys off of the list. Whatever happens, we'll be there to cover it for you all. Spoon, are you happy that after midnight tonight, you don't have to hear Christmas carols again for another few months?
I am kind of happy about that, but I did survive gift buying. I think I came up pretty good in that department. And now I actually got some good gifts. I got one.
What'd you get?
Really kick butt. I got, so my last car had a heated steering wheel, which is just, you don't know how nice that is until you have one. So I got a, like, cover for the steering wheel that plugs into the lighter and it heats the steering, you know, so it has a nice furry cover and it's warm. And it warms up just like that. That was sweet. That's a nice gift. You don't know how comfortable that is. So
Santa was good to you?
Yeah, Santa was cool.
You know. Ryan, do you feel like you can wipe your brow now that Christmas is over?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't mind Christmas. It's a lot more fun when, you know, I've got 3 kids and they make the holidays fun, but I don't, you know, necessarily rue seeing it pass either.
Well, now we just got to get through New Year's. Minnesota Vikings game will be on January 2nd. Well, let's see. Thursday will be December 30th. So I can't say we'll see you next year. I know that's everyone's favorite joke to make. But we'll see you next year when we're back at the stadium, guys. Until then, you've got a couple of days off this week thanks to a Saturday game. Enjoy the rest of your holiday time. Enjoy whatever Christmas you still have left, New Year's, whatever holiday you're celebrating. As the Packers get ready to take on the Minnesota Vikings, we will be there to cover it for you all on PackersNews.com. This has been the Green 19 Podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.